Since the late 80s, Stephen Perfidia Kirkham has styled wigs for some of your favorite entertainers. In the film Wigstock, Perfidia can be seen working the wig counter at Patricia Field's on some of the biggest queens' wigs of the era.
Perfidia created the iconic hair flip for Amy Sedaris' character Jerry Blank on the second season of Strangers with Candy. And he also created the new look for Cherry and Miss Yvonne on the Broadway production of Pee-wee's Playhouse. Incredibly, we filmed Perfidia for what may be the final episode of Cooking with Drag Queens in her home in New York City, while she styled the wig for Bob the Drag Queen just days before Bob went on to RuPaul's Drag Race to become America's next drag superstar.
Today, Perfidia joins us to kiki about all the marvelous wigs she fluffed up night after night for Hedwig and the Angry Inch on Broadway, and what didn't make it on her episode of Cooking with Drag Queens. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Hey, hello, this is Perfidia. What's up?
Hi, Perfidia, it's Fausto.
And Mark from Feast of Fun. How are you today?
Great, nice to hear from you.
Are we talking to you live from the Velasco Theater on Broadway?
No, that's pretty old footage that you've got there. But
how old is that footage?
Wow, it's going on 2 years now, I think.
Shit.
Yeah, that was the, what did you say, the most longitudinal episode of Cooking with Drag Queens to date?
Yeah,
we actually filmed a lot of your stuff at the same time that we filmed Bob just before Bob the Drag Queen got on RuPaul's Drag Race. In fact, we see you styling one of Bob's wigs that he wore for the publicity shot.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. And I wasn't supposed to talk about it yet.
You know, well, we didn't know it was Bob's wig at the time, right?
I knew.
Right.
Wait, hold on a second. So Bob said to you, girl, I'm getting on Drag Race in a couple days from now. You gotta help me.
Well, she probably wouldn't have said I'm getting on Drag Race. She probably just said I need emergency rig.
Wink, wink.
We knew.
But you didn't tell us, just for the record. We were not aware of it. It was just a lucky coincidence.
Mm-hmm. I've always been good about keeping my silence until the work comes out. And then that makes it even more fun.
What was the order? She said, I need a red wig, I need a black and white wig, or how did that exactly go about?
Yes, just exactly that. He came by the theater, and we did a fitting, and he had a couple wigs styled by me and a couple by my first assistant there at Hedwig. So he got a lot of people to work with.
But did like Bob specifically ask for a certain style, or were you left to have free rein to make Bob look as fierce and fabulous as possible?
Well, he said, you know, within my style, which is these big things. So he had some small hairdos. He had some big ones. I'm in the clown challenge and I'm in the promo shot. So those two things.
You must have been quite pleased when you first saw the promo shots and you're like, oh, my God, that's my wig.
It is a fun feeling when you see that. Yes, absolutely. Or at DragCon to see your work drawn in animation. I really get a kick out of that.
Do you have a sense of yourself sort of being on Drag Race? Because you styled so many wigs for so many different types of people. I mean, you did Miss Yvonne for Pee-wee's Playhouse on Broadway. You did Jerry Blank's wig on the second season of Strangers with Candy.
And well, last year I had a lot of wigs on Peppermint, and that was so much fun.
Was she any different to work with than Bob?
She likes big wigs more, so she was really eager to wear them, where Bob likes a more shake and go type of look usually.
So Bob's a little more conservative of the two drag queens, is what you're saying?
Not conservative. I mean, everyone changes styles from, you know, wavy and then sometimes they elaborate and back and forth.
Come on, business fish.
Business fish. Well, Bob's more like, you know, the comedy queen, and he's more about what's coming out of his mouth, and the style, as you can see, kind of is secondary, whereas you know, Peppermint's a showgirl.
Yeah, they definitely had distinct styles and where they were focusing their different looks. I have somebody this year on, so
what?
You know,
I believe that the name begins with the letter A, if I was to guess.
I'm not able to say, but you're cold.
We actually have another drag queen from Cooking with Drag Queens on this season, RuPaul's Drag Race.
Rumored. To be,
yeah. We don't have a verification because the queens definitely do not trust us with their lives.
No. Although you see, I feel like the Chicago queen has been put on blast more than any other queen in the past from Chicago that's been on the show. Like when Kim Chi was on, it was a little bit of mention, like here and there, kind of wink, wink. Or when Shay was on, it was a little wink, wink. But here it's just like, yeah, this girl's going to totally win. Oh my God, I'm so rooting for her on this season. I'm kind of like, I don't know if you're doing her any favors by saying like her name and then RuPaul's Drag Race next to it. It's like here it's kind of we're like, you know, we're a little sly about it because we want them to do well.
Well, Chicago's a mob city.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like when you want someone to die or to, you know, be in despair, you kiss them on the lips.
Well, yeah, you could curse somebody by letting out the information too soon. It's all about the big reveal. That's fun.
Yeah. Like if you really wanted to sabotage a drag queen's career, you do it just a big, like as soon as they get taken away or something like that. Congratulations. And blasting it everywhere.
Yeah. I heard Lola Von Miramar is on the next season of Drag Race and she wins.
And well, All Stars too. That was a lot of New York murmuring because of course, you know, half the girls are from Brooklyn these days. That are all stars on that show. It's incredible.
Well, this Friday, I believe they're announcing all the queens from All Stars 2.
Yeah, I already
three,
know.
Right?
Three. Yes, three. Well, the first one didn't count. So this is like an official now series where actually it's good and people want to watch it.
I think it's going to be great. Yeah.
Did you work on All Stars as well?
No, not to my knowledge, but I know friends that have wigs that are going to be on it. So it's going to be exciting.
Well, October is a very busy month for drag because this Friday, All Stars 3 is announced. Later this month, Dragula season 2 starts off.
Oh, I have a wig on that one.
Ooh, who's wearing it?
Erica Clash, the lavender.
Of course.
I absolutely adore her. She just did a testimonial, which is so adorable for season 3 of Cooking with Drag Queens.
And on Thursday, we find out that Cooking with Drag Queens is canceled.
Or it may. Yours might be the last ever episode of Cooking with Drag Queens, unless we get funded, because with Kickstarter, you know, it's all or nothing. We could get to like $19,999, and if it doesn't go to that $2,000, it's gone.
People are wondering what happens to all that money has been pledged.
It goes to Trump.
Yeah.
They send it all to Trump and they say, make America great again, Donald, because you couldn't make drag queens great. So you make America great.
No, actually,
Lady Bunny gets it. She's on your default. When you lose, she wins.
No, so Lady Bunny actually. So what happens to the money is it just goes back to the people who pledged it. And nobody gets anything and everybody goes home sad and cries into a pillow. But I believe that this is not the end of Cooking with Drag Queens.
Good. Be optimistic.
I think this is a beginning of something. I believe that the fans are going to watch your final episode and really get inspired because you're somebody who you're like a vampire.
Are you saying she sucks?
No, you've been there from the very early days of
this modern drag.
Of modern drag from Wigstock through Patricia Fields all the way up into the present day. And to me, it was just really great to be able to showcase you and your home, your amazing home in New York City and your workplace and just the behind the scenes magic that a lot of us never get to see before and probably never will.
Oh, it's so fun to share it with you. Even I had forgotten how the Hedwig wig room looked. So to see it again was really fun for me, too.
What was the best thing about styling those wigs in that room? I don't know if we captured it, but for a New York theater Broadway dressing room or makeup room, it was pretty big.
Right. Well, because we had a small cast, it would normally be full of cast members. And along the whole tour, in fact, we got some of the best dressing rooms for the wig department, which is pretty unusual, and it was really fun. I loved seeing the theaters across the United States.
Did you get into any trouble by having us there? Like, I mean, because we were really obnoxious, and I almost filmed Darren Criss going into his dressing room. but I was like respectful.
I had to get permission and they picked selective spots that you were welcome.
Oh, really? So there was a secret place that we were not allowed to see?
Right. I mean, an office where there might be paperwork or some schedules or any of that shit.
But that's kind of boring. No, I wanted to see Darren Criss in his brawn panties.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. He's beautiful. What a guy. We had so much fun.
He was, you know, a pocket gay full of love.
Mm. Yeah, he just has that really cute little body type. And he was one of the most athletic ones, that's for sure. I mean, he jumped off those speakers and did stuff that no other people did.
Was it hard for him to get into the role since, you know, he's so butch?
He had to turn it on and off. Yeah, he's a man's man underneath it all.
Because I heard that Neil Patrick Harris actually met with a lot of drag queens. I think he actually took Jinx Monsoon out for lunch to be like, how do I sissy that walk? I need a sissy that walk.
Yeah, well, he's friends with a lot of the girls. I mean, Willem came to see the show one night and he's a nice guy. I love Neil. He was amazing to work with, and to see him figure it out was pretty extraordinary.
I heard that Willem actually showed Neil Patrick Harris how to tuck.
I heard that too. I wasn't a witness, but I think that might be true.
They didn't let you watch.
Yikes. I just had to provide the duct tape.
I remember talking to you about Darren's role, and you said that the teenage girls really showed up for his shows.
Especially when we were in New York. Yeah. I think by the time the tour rolled around, it was more about Hedwig. Mm-hmm. But in New York, that was kind of his first Broadway show since How to Succeed. And they were almost didn't care about the show. They just wanted to see him. So they'd yell at him during the show.
Why is he popular with teenage girls? Oh, yeah, because Glee.
Yeah. Well, and also, Glee. Too, he did that Harry Potter
musical
thing or something they on did YouTube. On YouTube, right?
Yeah.
In fact, that's what made him a star first. Mm-hmm. And then that's what the casting folks put him on Glee. He was supposed to be a one episode kind of character, giving him kind of a love interest to Kurt. Mm-hmm. And he was such a hit on the show. They made him into a recurring character and pretty much, you know, outshined all the other actors that were supposed to be regulars.
He was adorable and is adorable, yeah. And we had so much fun.
Now, his hair is naturally very curly, right?
I think
I had heard. But a lot of times you see him in these publicity photos and it's super straight. And I feel like when we saw him backstage, it was pretty curly.
Right. And he would have been wearing the wig. And then in the show, he dumps water on his head. So even if it were styled, it would be wet by the end of the show.
The moisture brings back the curl.
Oh, and then the guy Ian that was doing the tour of Hedwig is now doing the king in Hamilton.
Oh, really?
Isn't that nuts? They saw him on tour and he was so wonderful that he got the opportunity to be in Hamilton.
Is he doing that on Broadway?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Because I got to tell you, the king that they had here in Chicago was fantastic. He was a really great performer. I'm not sure what his name was.
That's where I saw it. I never saw it in New York, actually. I saw it in Chicago, and it was amazing.
Yeah, if you want to see Hamilton at affordable prices, come to Chicago. Because we actually got tickets. A lot of times Broadway in Chicago will invite us to come see shows, but because it's so sold out, they didn't. But we were able to get tickets for like $110.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Where in New York, what are they like? Are they still like $1,500?
Oh, I don't know if they're that high anymore, but they're still, you know, five wouldn't be a crazy number.
It's like the tulip craze in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. The tickets became so expensive to see Hamilton, it almost bankrupted New York City's economy.
Well, I think they had that middle pocket. Those seats are probably, you know, $2,000 or something, but
$1 million.
Now, when Fausta called you a vampire of drag, it really, like, your drag career goes back pretty far. Because, like, even kind of like, were you doing drag even before you moved to New York City? Because weren't you living out in California with some other famous drag queens?
Yes, but I wasn't really doing drag until I came to New York. It was still the 80s, so people were doing Boy George drag, and that wasn't really considered full drag until, of course, he said that on TV at the whatever, the Grammys, when he said, you know how to pick a good drag queen. And I thought, oh, that's what we're doing.
Wait a minute, you were hanging out with Boy George in L.A. or something?
No, but we'd see him on TV.
Oh, I see.
Were you the one that lived with Sherry Vine?
No.
Okay.
No, she lived with Milan.
Yeah. Yeah, Milan lived here.
And you said, get the hell out of here. Milan was a really good roommate for you for a while.
Yeah, I love him. He's great and great performer.
And a lot of people remember Milan as the drag queen that wore the tuxedo infamously on RuPaul's Drag Race. But what I like to remember Milan is the one she did, the Miss Cleo. I don't think you know what's going on, Miss Cleo, Miss Cleo.
You were close. I don't think you really know.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You added too many syllables there, but
she had that viral video. Great. Yeah.
She's been in some Broadway musicals since then, and I know they were workshopping a really good one that's, you know, probably coming up in the next 2 years. So hopefully he'll be that in that.
Now, in Hedwig, a lot of the scenes involve Hedwig quickly changing from wig to wig. And we don't get to see how that actually happens, but you're involved throughout the whole show and assisting the actor who's playing Hedwig to change from one style to another.
Yeah, well, when you see the show, there's some that are actually preset in the stage, and Yitzhak will put them on.
But you're hiding inside some of the stage props, and you grab them like a squirrel grabbing a little nut or something.
It actually kind of changed on tour because there was no longer under the car. I think you might remember how I told you, showed you under the car. But we still worked it out. Yeah. It was a big part of the show, is the big quick wig changes. And towards the end of the tour, when we were at Kennedy Center, Hedwig got a finale wig that was ultraviolet, so it kind of was glowing in the black light. It was a nice finale, big finish.
How have you sort of soaked in this kind of new age of drag that we're living in? And you're certainly like very busy just styling, teasing hair endlessly day after day, year after year for all your clients. It must be exhausting, but also very fulfilling.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you see your work on TV or just in somebody in a show that's enjoying it, and I get the feedback from my clients, because at least New Yorkers usually will recognize my work and say, oh, well, you're wearing something from Perfidia. It's a good thing. And there's tons of new stylists. I love to see all the new people and what they're doing, and it's great.
How much of a hand did you have in helping Lady Bunny look the way she did in her early days as a drag queen?
Really no hand in it. She basically went to Bobby Miller, who was the main hairstylist before I kind of learned how to tease. He and Matthew Kasten from Boy Bar were the teasing people back then, and they did Bunny.
And so you were more known for what other styles at the time?
Well, just the wigs from the salon and from Patricia Field. There was all kinds of fun, sexy wigs and teased wigs and just a big variety and kind of 60s influence, because the beginning of the wave was during the Delight thing. And then it moved into, you know, all the updos and kind of Ivana Trump and Friends and those feathery hairdos and just, lots and lots of hairdos.
Because Coco Peru came of age around the same time Lady Maskeer formed Delight. And both of them have that similar red hair with a swoop look.
Yeah, that signature flip.
And that was like a very popular wig that was easy. You could buy it at like Walgreens at the time. And in fact, like for many years, I actually thought that Coco Peru was just like off the rack kind of thing. But most recently, when she was here in Chicago, she actually showed us how she styles her wig to make it look a certain way. But it's actually not something that you can just get off the rack.
She gets a red-haired wig with longer hair, and then she goes and gets it cut, and then she gets it she curls it herself. And that's how she does it.
That's how you keep it kind of unique.
But, you know, we did that cute video the first time we had met you. You came here, and we did a video on how to style a wig in the style of Lady Bunny. And I think Lady Bunny, like, she told us that she commented this to us and said, I find it interesting that a queen would make an hour-long video of how to do a wig in my style of hair and get it posted on YouTube for thousands to see, but will not make wigs for me. And I think during our interview for Cooking with Drag Queens, we asked you about making wigs for Lady Bunny, and you don't make wigs for her. And you gave us an explanation, but the editor didn't use it. Do you care to tell us now why you don't make wigs for Lady Bunny? Because I'm sure she would like to know.
Well, firstly, they're huge and they're really hard to make, to be honest. The guy that builds them for her, it's more of like a construction thing to stack all those wigs together, where I like to use one or two wigs and do a lot of styling. And so it's just a different technique.
Now, that's not what you told us.
Well, let me maybe say this story that Lady Bunny told us and contrast it to your story. So Lady Bunny had a friend who was transgender, and she tells the story of her getting her genital reconstruction surgery done on the cheap.
In Mexico.
I don't know if the story is true, but it's so outrageous and crazy. And so they're riding in the car, and she's like, I'm really hurting down there. And she takes her pant or skirt off or something, or underwear, and there's maggots crawling on her new vagina.
No, stop.
And she said she rolled down the car window and she said, this will not
do. She ripped off her new labia, said, this will not do, and threw it out the window.
Wow.
And that kind of reminds me of the story that I heard about Lady Bunny and a wig that you made for her one time.
For a wig stock.
Oh, and someone else ended up wearing it. But yeah, she just didn't like it. And then, you know,
but she just like stormed in and she was just like, this will not do. And then just ran off like she was in a hurry.
She never spoke. She just didn't take it.
So you made a wig for her, you presented it to her, and she was just like, looked at it.
And then I turned away, actually, because it was busy. And then when I looked back, the wig was there, but she was gone.
And you never made another wig for her after that.
It was like the Bugs Bunny, when, you know, the Roadrunner disappears, like there's the wig and the little swirl of bobby pins. She was gone.
Well, it's just like, imagine that, like she's running around, you know, like a chicken with her head cut off.
Well, and getting, a nightmare if you don't like your style. I get it. You know, she's so nervous. Like I said, the guy, Bobby Miller, that did her wigs for years, it was a labor of love. I mean, there were really some complicated hairdos there.
But there's no bad blood between the two of you guys. And if Lady Bunny,
I love her,
you know, called you tomorrow to style a wig for her, you would be happy to.
Sure.
I just want you guys to, you know, kiss and make up.
Oh, I love Lady Bunny. Yeah. Are you kidding?
And she loves you.
There's the group of the New York girls, you know, there's, you know, 30 of us, maybe more or less, but we've just been around so long that it's understood that even though people go in and out of drag or in and out of popularity, we all love each other. And
you girls that kind of came together in that late 80s scene in New York City, that's kind of documented in the Woodstock world, like
Wigstock
world. You guys, like, a lot of you are still involved in drag all these years later.
Yeah, I was just actually in the Bushwig Festival a couple weekends ago, and it was just like Wigstock. It's incredible.
And at the same time, it's like, to me, that's why we started Cooking with Drag Queens, just because there's so little documentation of all this stuff today. You know, you think like everybody's pulling out their cell phones and doing selfie after selfie, video after video. But it's noise. It gets lost.
It's hyper fragmented.
Yeah. And so we don't actually get a sense of the historical relevancy of all this that's happening. And that's why we were like, let's get a camera crew. Let's get some, you know, high definition, hot professional video cameras and lighting and a top quality editor and put together this series, because otherwise we're like, you know, remember when. I just hate talking about art sometimes when not be able to show it.
Right.
Yeah, a lot goes undocumented, that's for sure.
So, you know, to me, I'm just like, I got really emotional, actually, at the very, maybe because, you know, we're working for hours on end till 3 a.m. editing this stuff. But just like the ending of your episode of Cooking with Drag Queens, I don't want to give it away, but it was like, to me, it was a really beautiful moment seeing you sitting there surrounded by all these dolls and wigs and reflecting on your legacy as an artist.
I can't wait to see it.
You haven't watched it yet.
We sent you the link.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, well, I hope you like it.
Yeah, you'll be like, oh, shit.
There was one moment, and I wish that maybe the editor had, because you know when we talk to the drag queens and we talk to you, we usually ask about your drag family, and you're the drag daughter of a famous queen, International Crisis, who a lot of people might remember from the movie The Queen. And then one time during the videotaping, you were complaining about the process of cooking, and Fausto calls you a crybaby, and I called you International Crybaby.
I love it.
And so I just hope viewers, when they see that they kind of catch on to that, because I think it's a cute name for you, because you know you're from in remembrance of your mother.
Yay! I love it.
One of the reasons we chose schnitzel sandwiches and vodka-soaked gummy bears to do the episode is because Hedwig and the Angry Inch has a big component of Berlin, the capital of Germany. Berlin's not the capital of Germany. It's
Bonn.
It's Bonn, but it's a major city.
It's a major city of,
and
the
a lot
cultural
of,
capital.
And just like,
would.
You know, Bohemians and artists love Berlin because it offered them one thing that nowhere else they could get, which is cheap rent. And when I lived one summer in East Berlin, and we subsisted on these sandwiches that were sold everywhere. And they were mostly like fried meats or roasted meats. In with an apple-y cabbage slaw, lots of parsley, and this wonderful combination of sriracha sauce, mayonnaise, aioli, and this mango chutney that they would put into these breads, you know. And to me, it was like I wanted to sort of bring back that as a sandwich to pay tribute to Hedwig.
Delicious. It was fun.
You've been in Germany, right?
It's been a long time, but yes, I was in Berlin many years ago.
Were you a little bit surprised by the food that a lot of Berliners were eating at the time?
It was definitely sausages and schnitzels and things, yeah.
Yeah, because the scene that I was in, it had no sauce. They were mostly like either eating a lot of Middle Eastern food or like vegetarian food. There was hardly any mention of sausages.
Oh, really? Well, you should have been in Bavaria, because in Bavaria it was all sorts of wursts, bratwurst, vice versa, or it was schnitzel, or you'd get like a half a chicken.
Yeah, but like...
Oh, I remember the Turkish food was really big, too, when I was there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Turkish food places were like the stands and restaurants, and everybody was raving about that
stuff. The Turks are a lot of their immigrant workers. Like, you know, here in the United States, we have a lot of Latinos that work there. In Germany, it's their population, a lot of that is Turkish.
Yeah.
So they bring their good food with them.
Turks are the Mexicans of Germany.
Basically, yeah.
And to me, it's like, you know, that's why I felt like Hedwig, you know, for a lot of us who came of age in the late 80s and early 90s, East Berlin, when the Berlin Wall came down, it was a really powerful symbol, not just because it was, you know, the combination of East and West and sort of progress occurring around the world, but because... Also, it was about embracing this bohemian culture that was developing in our cities. And at that time period, a lot of wealthy people had fled to the suburbs. So living in places like New York City or Berlin or even Chicago was a very affordable place to be.
Yeah, it was great.
And so that's why you were able to develop this kind of countercultural artist scene, because it was a lot of people, you know, in a very tight space with an urban culture. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it was very affordable for any kind of person to participate.
And we're seeing that kind of in these urban centers now, you know, with these sky high rents that you see in San Francisco and New York City. And even here in Chicago, the rents are getting kind of unbelievable. It's like people are paying 2 to 3 times what I used to pay when I first moved here. And it's just like, it's a lot. And so I worry that we're missing that, because you kind of need, you know, dirt poor artists to come in and make great places great.
Yes, the high rent pushes the kids out. I mean, Flatbush, the Bronx, I mean, those places are where people go now to find a $600, $700 apartment.
Do you think Bushwig is sort of the Hedwig of today, in the sense that like more of those, you know, outlying communities and suburbs of New York City is kind of it's modern equivalent, the new John Cameron Mitchells of tomorrow. And certainly, like, you know, Sasha Velour is very much this generation's John Cameron Mitchell in her sensibility and her intellect and her style.
Yes, the kids in Bushwick are doing, you know, something really positive and creative, and yeah, using those spaces that aren't expensive to have really long, elaborate shows, live bands. It's really fun out there.
John Cameron Mitchell said he would never dress up as Hedwig again. I think he said that on Bill Maher and in various interviews. He was just kind of, he felt like he had run its course. He was in this costume and this character for a long time, way before we had the Drag Race explosion. And Mark and I were sitting at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, and somebody
at the
got
South by South gay party,
South by South gay party. And somebody got on stage and started to be like, on nights like this. And I'm just like, I am so sick and tired of another Hedwig impersonator. Ugh.
And then I'm like, Fausto, I think that's him. It sounds like him.
He's how
like,
could no, it be? He not. Said he would never do it. And we turn to the stage and John Cameron Mitchell standing there out of drag, singing the entire score to Hedwig and the Angry Inch with a full band. Mm. It was magical.
I don't think he did the whole score. I think he did selected numbers.
He did Wig in the Box. He did Sugar Daddy. He did Berlin Wall. Mm. He did Exquisite Corpse. Mm. And he did the song for Yoko and Nina. And,
yeah. And I went up and I said to him afterwards, I thought you were never going to sing those songs again. Well, I'm working on a little something.
No,
so.
He said, well, one or two couldn't hurt.
But he did say he was also working on a little something, but he wouldn't say what it was.
And that was when he was in the process of bringing Hedwig to Broadway.
Yes, and he even took it to the stand-up version of Hedwig to Tokyo just recently, where he just does a few songs and maybe he does some talk back to the audience.
Has there ever been rumors? I heard about this, that he was actually working with Stephen Trask. This sounds really like... sounds like a really far-fetched rumor that he was going to do a sequel to Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Mm.
There's definitely a storyline there. Yeah.
Are you familiar with the post? When we end Hedwig, he hands over the reins of his career to Yitzhak.
I don't know the details. I just kind of remember them talking about Hedwig too. And that, it's her looking back at her life. So it's somehow in the future, but I don't know exactly what that means.
Because it certainly would be a heck of a lot of fun. On the podcast, with Sharon Needles, we called, you know, who we called late at night.
I know.
Auntie Jane.
That's right.
Jane County. And we talked to her about like how she felt about, John Cameron Mitchell maybe co-opting her
being
story?
Inspired by her life and her work as a transgender entertainer with an Angry Inch. And she said
she was a little bitter about it at first, but she's grown to accept it. Because she was like, this is what's similar to me, and that's what's similar, and that's what's similar. Yeah. So there was a lot of stuff.
And then we called Lady Bunny and she's like, Sharon Needles, who? Fausto, who?
Let's see.
I mean, do you know anything about that? Like how Jane County and John Cameron Mitchell, have they kissed and made up? Sounds like they have.
Yes, absolutely. She's honored, I think. You know, we do some things that are similar to her in the show. So, it's definitely a beautiful representation and not just a straight up ripoff.
Well, she says definitely the hero, what you call the hero wig, which is Hedwig's like main wig, the iconic wig that you recognize from. She's like, that's my hairstyle.
Interesting. But, okay.
Yeah. But again, like you didn't design that wig, but you style it for the show.
Was yeah. Mike Potter was the designer of the original Hedwig and the Broadway version and the tour.
But you know, if Mike had an idea and you're like, let me fix that so it looks better.
I don't think that the hero wig was the one that she thought looked like her.
No,
it was the finale wig, the punk rock wig. that looked like her. I don't think she ever wore the feathered look. No,
the Farrah Fawcett.
It's the punk rock look at the end.
Well, but, and somebody was pointing out that I'm surprised I didn't catch on to this, that the classic hero Hedwig look is actually kind of a stylized vagina. It's like a uterus.
It is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
with the clitoris on the top.
When you draw it, it does kind of look like that, the way it's rolled back.
Pussy power.
Was that sort of an happy accident, or was that intentional, do you know?
Not intentional.
Oh, so they're usually like, oh, so it looks like a vagina. So what? Sure.
So what?
You know, how did you feel about, like, so one thing that we want to do this podcast is get the guests to sort of reflect on what they feel wasn't shown in the episode of you with Cooking with Drag Queens. And you know, for a lot of them, they're always surprised on how tense and exciting it is to cook on a TV show with cameras and lights and a crew who are filming your every move.
Yeah, I had so much fun doing it. I'm looking forward to it.
But we actually got to taste vermouth on the rocks for the first time for all of us.
I don't think I liked it.
You didn't like it?
It's not, you know what it is? There's so many different types of vermouth out there. And I want to suggest to people out there, like, go beyond that Martini and Rossi that's kind of been sitting on your shelf for 2 years. Get a good one and just kind of give it a try. But also, too, is like the really good vermouths, if you want to make a good martini, because a lot of people nowadays, they're like, they don't like that Martini and Rossi. So they're like, they all want their martinis dry. Try the traditional recipe with some of that and see how you like that, because if it's a good vermouth, it's going to make a great martini.
I like the vodka gummy bears.
Yeah, we did those because Venus on a chocolate clamshell rising on a sea of marshmallow foam was too elaborate.
Yeah, spam on a s'more. I'm not sure how you'd figure that one out.
So the recipe, for folks who may not grasp, that is just two packets of Haribo gummy bears, because you want to use the German ones. You cover it, slather a bunch of vodka on top of that with a shot of triple sec and juice of half a lime or a lemon, and just let that sit in your fridge for 2 days, right? Not just a day. And one thing we discovered in the process of making this is that the gummy bears stick to each other very much like the humanity did in the song Origin of Love.
Wow, that's a stretch.
It did. It was a beautiful accident, right? The backs of the gummy bears were stuck to each other. And so just like sort of the proto-humans in Greek and Roman mythology, mm-hmm. we were, you know, two sets of heads, two sets of arms.
Children, the moon and the sun and the earth and stuff. Yeah. That's what they look like, because they were all stuck together, you know.
And that's why we're fighting. We're looking for our other half on this world, which is, you know, very conformist in some ways. Is like the idea that you're somehow incomplete until you find somebody else.
I guess that is problematic, isn't it?
It is.
But, you know, it's like, it is, you know, human life and human existence is about making that connection with other people, whether it's one person or two people or a whole community. Right? No man is an island. We get very philosophical here on Feast of Fun and Cooking with Drag Queens.
Even though
we just swallowed those gummy bears, you were like, more gummy bears.
You were kind of against them at first, and then later in the episode, I had to kind of pull them off of you.
Yeah, I feel like I got pretty tipsy.
It was so much fun. You know, we actually got to meet one of the understudies for Yitzhak. Afterwards, we took you to a club called Berlin here in Chicago.
Yes, Shannon was there.
And what's Shannon's friend's name?
Connolly.
Yeah, Shannon. But she and her friends all have a girl group.
Oh, she was the singer for Les Zeppelin.
Les Zeppelin.
And but I think she's moved on to other projects now. But she did that for years before Hedwig.
Well, her friends who live here in Chicago have a girl group. And they done a musical parody of the song More Than Words, right? But it's about Donald Trump. And they asked me to be in their music video as a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so I put on my Hedwig makeup on and showed up as a wrestler. And I'm carrying these chicks around like luggage.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's coming up on their...
That's from you.
Kelly, yeah.
Yeah, we met her through you.
Perfect.
Yeah, so you're making a little bit of magic, for New York magic, happen here in Chicago.
I love Chicago.
Yeah, we love you too. We miss you here.
Well, it's funny, people said that Berlin was dangerous and whatever, what? But...
The club?
This club, and I like dangerous, I guess, because I had the best time there.
I don't think the club itself is very dangerous, but like any nightclub, it's like you have to be careful and watch your belongings. You know, you don't want to leave your drink out, but it's like no more dangerous than any other club. But also, too, that street outside, you know, Belmont Avenue, there's, you know, there's some drug and sex trafficking there. And also, too, but there's also, you have to remember, there's, you know, there's college students, there's Cubs fans. So there's a lot of, you know, people that have been partying all night. So there's a lot of vulnerable people on the street. And there's people out there that will take advantage of that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Did somebody ever, you know, try to take advantage of you in drag?
No, I was making out with the Irish guy at the bar. I loved it.
In drag? While you were in makeup?
Yeah. Not the night I was with you.
Oh, it was another night?
Another night.
Oh.
So you get back to the scene of the action.
She went back.
Action.
She's like, I'm going back to get some action.
Yep.
Well, good for you. Well, Berlin is also known for a place where, you know, there's a lot of drag shows that go on there. And then there's a lot of trans girls that work out there. So men who are trans attracted frequent the place. So if you're trans, it's a good place to pick up a guy.
Yeah. Super mm-hmm. friendly.
Now, for you, when you dress up in drag and you go out, you're doing it mostly for fun.
Yeah, I don't identify as a woman. My character is a drag queen. And usually I like to wear costumes of some kind, not mm-hmm. just regular fashion.
But mm-hmm. I noticed that you're so good at it that you're kind of like a Drag Race girl, is that everybody wants to have their photo taken mm-hmm. with you.
Yeah, I had fun at Drag Race. Yeah, I'm happy to do it. It's something that when you dress elaborate, people want to take a picture with you.
And your drag style, kind of like when you came up, it was kind of like very like 60s inspired. And you continue to kind of do that look. But you also kind of branch off into that Harajuku like Lolita look these days as well. Are you getting more action as a Lolita?
I don't really get action in drag, but people that haven't seen Lolita in America are really get a kick out of it because it's still kind of a cosplay look compared to New York nightclub looks are kind of on the fetishy look, I'd say mm-hmm. these days, you know, lots of lingerie and leatherwear. And then you have your kookier girls. It's a real mix right now.
I hear in New York City is like girls, you know, that are usually booked for two or three numbers. And because the bars don't have dressing rooms very much, that it's basically a strip show. And by their third number is they're performing in bras and panties because they've already taken off what else they've had on. And because they can't really change into anything. So they just kind of like, I'll just wear this and end in my bra and panties.
Yeah, New York's never been one to have beautiful dressing rooms, unfortunately. Mm. So you just got to make it work.
Well, that reminds me of like the summer that I spent in Berlin. People are like, they were asking me if I was going to do my cabaret show in drag. And I was kind of like, cabaret show? Well, I did bring some karaoke tracks. Mm-hmm. So for a lot of the Germans, they were just like, they wanted to hear me sing karaoke. Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And Aquarius from the musical Hair. And I didn't have much of a drag, so I just wore kind of like a cream-colored evening gown and a bra and panties, and I would sit in these hunky, you know, thick German men's laps.
And sounds so
for
great.
For me, when I actually heard about Hedwig and the Angry Inch, it felt very much like, I mean, I had to ask myself, like, is every drag queen going into Germany, like, in this time period and, you know, doing shows
it
or
was
something?
The hot thing in the 90s.
Yeah.
For sure.
People it really was,
you know, and so it's great that like we have this kind of documented and mm-hmm. captured as a musical in Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and that you're sort of like in the thick of it all, mm-hmm. sort of shaping well, that as time goes along.
I think the other thing too with it was that too is like Berlin, because people could kind of go and experience Berlin again, and people, queer liberation was starting to, you know, was very at the height with the AIDS crisis and everything. People were remembering what it was like to be queer and their queer history, and so they were kind of looking back to the 30s in Berlin too, you know, to that Weimar Republic and looking at how queer that was, and then bam, the Nazis came and shut that all down.
Well, and there's also, Hedwig is similar to Romy Hogg's story. Romy Hogg is the one who dated David Bowie. And so there's a sort of a similarity of Tommy Gnosis and a drag person influencing their act. So I think there's so many different characters pulled to make Hedwig. But she's someone really fun to research. Yeah.
Because Bowie did spend like a good part of the 70s living in Berlin. Is, you know, in fact, I think he did his movie Just a Gigolo while he was living in Berlin.
And I think Low.
Ooh, Low?
Yeah, the Low album.
Oh, his album named Low.
Yeah.
I thought it was like an artist named Low.
Well, there's a band called Low.
Oh, okay.
And they have really, they're actually a good band. I think they might be out of Milwaukee or something like that, or Wisconsin. They're really good. It's very low music.
And they're like, get down with Low.
No, it was, I listened to it in the 90s.
It was Bowie's, it was really sort of it was a really experimental album at the time, and it's pretty.
Girl, I'm just like, I gotta tell you, I am strung out, ragged out, stretched out, rolled up in a tight ball because of this Kickstarter.
We're almost there, though.
We're so close.
Good. Congratulations.
Thank you. At the time of this recording, I'm going to give you a figure here. We're at $12,872. We only have $78 to go, but we have
7,000 and some change.
About two days to do it. Now, the last time we did a Kickstarter, we had 460 people pledge, and right now we have 272 backers. So we can just get 200 more people to back the project at whatever level. We have great rewards. You can make a donation of any level and choose not to get any kind of reward. Or you can sign up and get like a tote bag, t-shirt, apron. There's special packages where you can get a phone call from us. We'll take you out for a nice burrito.
I'm going to feed you a burrito in your mouth.
Oh, I wore my t-shirt to Bushwig, actually.
You did?
Yes, and I was telling people about the shows.
Aww. And they were like, sure you are. Do you think
cooking with drag queens.
Because we've had like Bob, and we've had Alaska, Jinx Monsoon, Sharon Needles, Trixie Mattel, Katya. I mean, pretty much Lady Bunny. I mean, some really big names on the series. So sometimes I hear like other drag queens telling people that they're on the show, and their friends go, yeah, right. Mm. Like, they don't believe them.
That the star that big in our eyes.
Yeah. And I'm kind of like, part of it is like, we're all still a very small community, and we're all kind of know each other, and we're friends with friends of each other. And that's what makes it easy for us to be able to tell the stories, because I could just, you know, call up Vivacious or Lady Bunny or Jackie Beat or somebody who knows somebody else. And they're like, girl, I'll tell you the real tea. And I ask everybody that I meet, like, what's Perfidia really like? And they all have nothing but nice things to say about you.
I would say it still is a pretty nice community, no matter if it's like the Uptown Girls, to me, is like the Hell's Kitchen Girls. That's one group. And then there's the Bushwig Girls and the Chicago Girls and San Francisco types. And it's fun, all the different girls. I love it.
And I'm starting to see a lot of more people sort of owning and claiming their gender nonconformity. You know, like in the past days, there was a big division between their drag creation and their identity. Right. So
absolutely. The gender fluid thing is, you know, even surprising to me, even having known trans people, to just the dialogue. It's really just out there now. And gender nonconforming is a really big thing where it's a lot more shades of gray.
Well, and part of it is that your drag creation is a reflection of you, but you are also a reflection of your drag creation. And in some ways it's really healthy, I think, that all these young people are starting to say, you know what, maybe in another time and age, I would have been said I was a cisgendered gay man. But, you know, I'm actually gender nonconforming. We're actually starting to see a lot of people we thought were cisgendered straight women saying that they're gender and sexually nonconforming. And it's allowing people to sort of say, I want to walk a different path than one that's been created for me.
Well, I think also, too, like these society, how they define these gender roles are just too encumbering for a lot of people. And it'd be like, I just want to be me. I want to be genderqueer. I don't want to be like, oh, I'm a woman, I have to dress this way, or a man, I have to dress that way.
The new trend that I've seen is the drag queen with the female to male boyfriend. It's just a new phenomenon, or not new, but something that I hadn't seen a lot of.
Where are you saying that some drag queens have like trans men as accessories?
No, as boyfriends,
as lovers, and so it feels like a good compliment. Because I always feel like good strong relationships, it's not about like you meeting each other as equals, but about you reflecting different parts of each other that seem to make you into a strong whole. You know, so if one of you is really good at makeup, the other one is good at performing, or if one of you guys is really good with money, the other one is good with creativity, and so on.
Well, I think a lot of this is there's so much fluidity. Like maybe before that they did drag, maybe they wouldn't have considered having a trans person as a partner. But because they kind of have like had their own gender route, or they've gone that, so they can see it in others. And I think it's kind of interesting with some people. It's, you know, they may identify as, one sexuality before they transition. And then after they transition, they go a different way. Like our friend comedian Jeffrey J was a lesbian and then transitioned and is now a gay man.
Isn't that something? Uh-huh. All the little color, all the little flowers in the garden.
Yeah. So it's kind of like what's in your heart is like you're just kind of like a queer person at heart. So if if your gender identity changes, then you who you are attracted to changes too. But because you're still queer.
Yeah.
And that's why we urge people not just to paint with all the crayons in the box, but to cook with all the spices on the rack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're so close to season 3. We can almost taste it.
Nom, nom, nom.
All that fried deliciousness.
Fry harder. Pretty much every recipe that we have for the next season is going to be fried.
I really love those popcorn wigs. That is so gorgeous.
You know what I want? Fausto's been like, I want to get one of those like boobs for queens. And I'm just like, Fausto, those things cost like $600. I'll tell you what, I'm going to make you a popcorn breastplate.
and tasty too.
And you can just eat them.
Eat me.
Those wigs actually, you know, they are edible. You can eat them. That is actual caramel corn. And I think if I had to do it all over again, I would just try and figure out how to like dye Elmer's glue like purple and pink and just have it like not be edible. But that's part of the fun, is that it's real food and it is something you really could eat. But I think the glue would hold together better.
Oh, you know what I've used before is liquid glass, like you would do a tabletop, and you pour it on top of the item, and it kind of
shellacks that might it.
Yeah, I did wigs like that actually.
Out of what?
Out of you pour the liquid glass over the wig, and it looks like the wig's dripping.
Oh, how fun!
And so basically, it looks like the person got dunked in plastic.
Yeah,
in the version that we did, it was, it looked like a dripping wig, but it was all that liquid glass.
What are some of the more unusual objects that you've used to, like, make out of wigs? Because certainly you use a lot of synthetic hair or real hair, and we just did popcorn, and I've seen a lot of drag queens lately kind of do headpieces with, what are those, like, you know, safety ties, like a bunch of those put together.
And well, I think you probably saw at DragCon those queens that had those giant foam wigs.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of something I saw in Ibiza or an Australian style, and I hadn't seen it here. And now I saw it here, and it's incredible. I mean, the size of those wigs, I love it.
Chris Marsh from Project Runway, and he's also famous for dressing up as that the big, thick and juicy Wonder Woman that you see on every now and then. Oh, and that series,
the series of wigs he did for Target is legendary.
Mm-hmm. And those are everybody like foam loved them. Wigs, and at the time, like everybody had them, and everybody,
especially
like,
the orange one. I mean, people still wear that orange one to this day.
And I'm just so sad that a lot of those wigs. Sorry about that. I'm just sorry that a lot of those wigs went straight, have been forgotten mostly. Like, you can't even get them at Target anymore.
Oh, well, I think it was just one season, one collection. He didn't pay for it forever. I mean, they didn't.
Yeah. You don't get to license it forever.
I wish Target would like hire Chris Marsh every year to come out with a new wig collection to encourage everybody in the world to be in drag.
Some of those wigs I don't think held up over time. I think some of them, because they're made out of a foam, right? And so there's some discoloration there, and some of them kind of, they don't look so good the next year.
I'll tell you one wig that I'm famous for making myself that I got inspired from Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. And at the time, I was just like, you know what makes great wigs is aluminum foil.
And yikes.
You can style it in such a way that the foil develops a curl, much like hair, and put that on and construct a wig. And they're really quite stunning and gorgeous. And I hate putting this idea out there because I know somebody's going to be like, I have a new look, you know, like,
I did it first.
Well, part of it is like, you know, we've had so many ideas of come from this podcast go mainstream, you know, and then people like question whether the source of the idea, that sometimes I'm like, I want to be a little more secretive and keeping it, you know, tight to my heart. Right. So when I'm ready to cash in on it, the world is ready to celebrate it. So I don't want to give too many details.
I shared a couple photos of several years ago on Facebook, and I wish I had saved them. But somebody recognized them from a magazine from like the 70s or 80s. And it was a wig on a couple of different women, but it was all pieces of bread, like rolls, breadsticks, like croissants and all this stuff. And it was done in kind of like a almost like a Renaissance kind of style. And so, so if anybody knows what I'm talking about or something like that, or maybe has an image of that, I'd love to see it again, because I would love to recreate something like that for Cooking with Drag Queens one of these days.
Well, that's what ultimately in like season 3 of Fry Harder, if we are able to reach all this amount and go over, one thing we would like to do is sort of do an Iron Chef meets RuPaul's Drag Race and actually challenge queens to build something extraordinary in front of judges. And we have some celebrities from the Food Network who are signed on and ready to go. All we need is the camera crew.
You believe it?
They're like,
I'm in.
They're in. They're ready to go. High profile, big names. I don't want to announce any of the names, but if you guys know our community here in town, you know who some of these people are, and they're ready to do it. They're dying to do it.
Oprah.
Not Oprah. Well, Food Network. Food Network. Not what? Oprah's now on 60 Minutes.
I kind of love that. Oprah flew me out to Chicago once to show the wigs that were in style at Patricia Field. That's my big Oprah story. Yeah.
Oh, and you were actually on the show?
On the show. I have the VHS somewhere. I've got to transfer it over.
Oh, my God. Transfer that over and put that up on YouTube. I want to see. Yes. I totally want to see that.
Me and Oprah.
And so you actually got to talk to her and you're like, hey, this is what I, and did she try any on? And she's like, this is the wig I wear.
She just asked about what was on trend in New York. We showed it and she was very cool.
Now, were these wigs for women's everyday wear, or were these like drag queen wigs?
They were kind of girl kooky, not too crazy. Again, it was around the Cure, Lady Cure time. So it's,
it's a way back.
Yes, I believe in the power of love. Let them call me naive, but I still believe. Yeah,
yeah. I wonder if she still believes.
She still believes.
Yeah.
Lady Miss Keir was like, she had a hot boyfriend when we saw her at the final nights of Tranny Shack in San Francisco a while back.
Oh, yeah, and she DJs, and she's on the scene again, absolutely.
She has a healthy sex life.
Ooh, lucky her.
Yes, girl. Well, Perfidia, I hope that this call catches you in a good headspace. Because you really flipped our wig with your creations.
Oh, yeah.
And we thank you for several lifetimes of service and culture and fierce wig stylings mm-hmm. to so many countless mm-hmm. incredible entertainers. Without you, who knows what, you know, Strangers with Candy would have been like, or Pee-wee's Playhouse or Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Everybody would look so bland and flat.
They'd probably all be bald.
No, we would just look like, you know, like cats that fall into water. Sad and forlorn and not fluffy and fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fluffy. That's my thing.
You're the fluff. You're just pick, fabulous.
Pick, pack, pack, flick, flick.
Pick, pick, flick, flick.
Pack, pack, flick. Yes. Hey, and I looked at it recently and it was finally up to 32,000 views.
Ooh. You know, I taught that technique. If you look on the Cooking with Drag Queens with Kim Chi, that yellow wig she's wearing, when we interviewed Shea Coulee, she was actually working on that wig, and I taught her your technique. She had never known that technique on how to tweeze that wig.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, wow.
So that you can see how full and lustrous that wig is, and compliments of Shea Coulee.
Is from Chicago also?
She's from Chicago. She and Kim Chi both used to live right around the corner from us. They lived right across the hallway from each other. And so
Kim Chi's wigs always look gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure she has a lot of people style them for her now. But
oh yeah,
you know, back in the day, you know, she's a crafty girl. She's a very smart queen, and she's a very funny queen, and very charming and sweet. I'd love to get her to come back and cook on Cooking with Drag Queens.
Well, that's the thing about season three. We want to bring back some of the girls back and have them battle each other. Just give them sharp knives and butter and some bread.
That sounds good.
And have some fun.
Perfidia, I hope you enjoy your episode of Cooking with Drag Queens. We sent you the link already, so you can go and check it out right now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, doll.
You're welcome. Where can people, if people want to hire you to style their wigs, what's the best way to contact you?
I still have Perfidia's Wig World online, and people can reach me through that. It's through Facebook.
Perfidia's Wig World.
Mm. Yeah, it's like a little shop online.
And with the right amount of lube, you do offer a sliding scale.
Yikes. Wow.
Well, how else is that scale going to slide if it's not properly lubricated?
Okay.
Thank you for putting up with our dad jokes.
Yeah, thank you. We're going to be going. We're going to be in the Austin International Drag Festival in November. I do need some new looks, girl. Mm. Girl.
Oh, I can't wait to see what comes out of that festival. I love
it's a hot, 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 gorgeous explosion of wonderness.
Lots of good drag.
And mess.
Check it out.
Which city is it in? I'm sorry.
Austin.
Austin International Drag Festival.
It's the festival where you can taste and see and touch the queens.
Mm-hmm. Fun.
The headliner is Sasha Velour, right?
Yeah, and she's like, oh, wow. And nobody's going to show up for it. So you could basically like go to Sasha Velour's, you know, hotel room and just watch her sleep. She won't mind.
Creepy. And we're opening it with a live podcast.
We're
going to be interviewing some very interesting folks.
With drag queens of all ages. Literally, our youngest guest, I think, is like 10 years old. And our oldest guest is like 85. So it's like...
Talk brilliant. About a sliding scale.
queens of every generation.
I love it.
This year. Perfidia, thank you so much for being such a good friend and for letting us poke around in your home with video cameras. Mm-hmm. It's really something really special. Mm.
Thank you. Thanks again.
Mm-hmm. Bye, sweetie.
Bye, doll.
Bye.
Perfidia lives in New York City. If you want to hire her to style some wigs, go to Perfidia's Wig World, where you can turn booger into beauty.
Mm-hmm. You get a wig made by one of the most famous wig makers in the world, and one of the most talented.
If you mention Feast of Fun, she'll practically just give it to you.
She'll give you a sliding scale.
She'll come over to your house and put it on you naked,
nude. The other thing too is if you're going to New York City. Tell her what you want and you can just pick it up in person and save on shipping costs.
That's right, honey. You can leave her place with the wig on your head, mm-hmm. ride the subway, be like, please
turn a trick.
Please don't touch me. I'm looking good.
I want to remind folks, we just have a few days left to get Cooking with Drag Queens funded. Go to cookingwithdragqueens.com right now. Make a pledge. Let's make this happen. We need about 200 more people to step up and make a pledge of any denomination. Get a t-shirt, a tote bag, an apron, stickers, magnets, all sorts of fabulous goods.
Can I give people a little tease if we get season three?
Yes, give a tease.
So I've been talking to Varla Jean Merman.
You have.
And she is, you know, she's a beast.
She's a beast.
She is, she's like
lifting weights and hairy and manly outside of that dress.
Super fucking hot. She's the queen who always, like, you know, gets what she wants. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's like, when she's out of drag and she, everybody wants to talk to her. When she's in drag, everybody wants to kiss her. And she, of course, known best for her appearance in the film Girls Will Be Girls. Mm-hmm. And of course, her hilarious one woman shows in Provincetown as she tours around the country. Well, guess what? She's planning to come to Chicago in the spring, and she's going to let her film us. I mean, she's going to let us film her ripping out of her clothes.
All right.
Yeah, like Hulk, She-Hulk. Varla Jean Merman is mad because you didn't support cooking with drag queens. She's going to come out there and pound the money out of you. She's going to hang you upside down and tickle you until the coins come out. I can't. So, yeah. So I've been talking to her, and she said she's on board. She's going to do it. T.S. Madison, a bunch of the girls from Dragula and the Boulay Brothers. Just a really exciting queens that we've been part of our podcasts and lives. I'm sort of blanking out on some of the names and projects that we have, but it's all coming down the pipeline, folks. We're like Mark and I are like Lucy and Ethel in that skit with all the chocolate coming down. You know, at first they were like able to handle it, and the woman came out and was like, "Well, since you're doing such a good job, more. Double the speed." And then you and I are just like
eating more,
shoving all those nuggets into our mouths. But Cooking with Drag Queens season three, fry harder. It's going to be crispier, sweeter, saltier, and ooh, so yummy. I can almost taste it.
Again, go to cookingwithdragqueens.com and pledge today.
Yes.
Thank you.
Because it's a season of love, you know. 2000. How much do we have right now, Mark?
What is it? At the time of this recording, of this here podcast, 12,872. So we just need 6,128. So can we do this?
We can do this, yeah.
Can we get there? Yeah. Let's get there. Let's do it.
$12,872. How much do we need to raise to save Cooking with Drag Queens? How about $3? I know you got it, baby. Come on. How about $10? You can get some wallpapers on your screen. How about $1,000? You could be an executive producer of Cooking with Drag Queens. Bye, everyone.
Bye.